Now, talking about amazing chemistry, over the past few years, the use of electronic or e-cigarettes has expanded massively, and this has sparked a passionate debate among scientists and health organisations and users about the safety and risks of these things, as well as their potential benefits in helping people to quit. But what is the scientific evidence for their safety, and who's using them? Kat Arney spoke to Robert West, who's Professor of Tobacco Research at University College London.
We know a lot about the concentration of the vapour that's coming from e-cigarettes, and the best estimate is that it's somewhere in the region of a 20th as harmful as cigarette smoke, which of course is extremely harmful. Not completely safe, but much safer than smoking. We know that the vast majority of people who are using e-cigarettes, certainly in countries like the UK, are smokers who are trying to stop or cut down. There are very, very few people who are never smokers or long-term ex-smokers using these products.
People who are concerned about e-cigarettes, they sort of broadly fall into two camps. There's almost the Father Ted style, "Ooh, careful now." And then there's the people who go, "Well, look, these are much less harmful than cigarettes. We should just let people use them. We should encourage people to use them to get away from traditional cigarettes." Where do you kind of see these two camps dividing up?
I think one of the problems is that the two camps are coming from different moral positions. One camp is coming from what you might consider a utilitarian position, where you count deaths and you count harm, and you weigh it up and you try and formulate policies on the basis of which policy is going to cause the least harm or the most benefit. And the other camp, although they don't necessarily say this, that's my impression, is that they're coming from a much more absolutist stance, that tobacco industry is bad, nicotine is bad, smoking is bad, and it's all as bad as each other. What you tend to do is, once you start with a certain moral position, you tend to see the evidence in that way and you tend to shape the evidence in that way. So the moralistic camp tends to exaggerate the harms of e-cigarettes and the potential dangers and downplay the potential benefits, and the other camp downplay the risks and actually potentially exaggerate the benefits. And it's a difficult job to try and find a path through this in terms of saying, you know, well, what are the actual facts here?
As scientists, obviously, we should be basing our decisions on facts, and you would hope that health policymakers would base their decisions on facts. Do you think we have enough scientific evidence about e-cigarettes, or what more evidence do we need to gather before we can work out, are they safe, who should be using them, how should they be legislated for?
I think it's like any health policy decision. You collect data and then you formulate policy, and then you collect more data and you adjust policy. And so I think the policy approach that's being adopted by the English Department of Health and Public Health England is about right, which is to take a relatively cautious view, but also to recognise the potential benefits. So e-cigarettes, if they don't make a medicinal claim, can be manufactured and sold as a consumer product, but with restrictions, so that you can't sell it to people under 18, and there are restrictions on marketing. And you monitor, as we do, on a monthly basis what goes on, and you see how things are developing. That policy seems to be working quite well. We're tracking the smoking prevalence and the use of e-cigarettes on a monthly basis in England. And what we're finding is that prevalence continues to decline. Actually, quitting rates are higher now than they have been since we started tracking it back in 2007. So that's looking quite good. We're not seeing take-up of e-cigarettes among non-smokers. You know, so far, so good.
One of the things that people do get concerned about is, for example, we're now seeing adverts on the sides of buses for e-cigarettes that look for all the world like adverts for cigarettes. And a lot of big tobacco companies have now bought into e-cigarettes, and people are worried that it's maybe renormalizing smoking after a lot of work to make smoking not look cool, to ban tobacco advertising.
There is a theoretical risk that the way that e-cigarettes are marketed, that they could be seen to renormalise smoking and to undermine all the work we've done on tobacco control. So we have to look at that. But one thing to remember about the tobacco industry is that they would like nothing more than for e-cigarettes to go away. And what better way of helping to make e-cigarettes go away than to do terrible things by e-cigarette companies and get the public health community to be anti-e-cigarettes. And then you have this accidental unholy alliance between the public health community and the tobacco industry, both achieving the common goal of making e-cigarettes disappear. The thing to remember is that the death toll from smoking is absolutely enormous and gigantic, and it's a catastrophe that continues on a daily basis, with 6 million people a year worldwide being killed by tobacco, people dying prematurely as a result of something that seems to be, you know, accepted within society. So we just have to remember what the challenge is here.
In Britain, it's a jumbo jet crash. Every day is the death toll just due to smoking. It's very high, isn't it? Catani was talking to Robert West about e-cigarettes and what they might or might not be able to contribute to quit rates.
Now, Ed Wilson has tweeted us at Naked Scientists about one of the stories we've been talking about so far today. And he said, energy of impact creating complex molecules is much more satisfying than trusting in creation in unknown conditions in space. It is nice to kind of have an idea of how it might all have started, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. And I thought it was very elegant the way that I would use an iodine laser to generate these 4,000 degrees C temperatures and then recreate the chemistry in a Petri dish that we think occurred in a comet crater. But these things are coming in at 20 kilometres a second. There's a lot of energy in there. And the key question, though, is where that formamide came from in the first place, because some critics of that story have said, would there have been enough of it around? Jury's out on that one. So we really need a bit more work on this. So we need to remain healthily sceptical. You're listening to The Naked Scientist with me, Chris Smith, and also with Ginny Smith. If you'd like to get in touch with us, the email address is chris@thenakedscientist.com. You can also pick us up on Twitter. It's @NakedScientist. Now, still to come, how universities are sexing up the science stories that they send to the media, and also a pill that will help you to fight the flab.
Before that, though, to the healing power of friendship.